We are Vineyard.
Somos Viña.
We are Vineyard.
So they hand me this book, and it's The Ragamuffin Gospel by Brennan Manning.
Bro.
And they're upfront about it. They're like, hey, man, it's like, this is a Christian book or whatever, but I still think you should read it. Like, it's different than what you might expect. So, again, I was so in with these guys. It's like, whatever. I'm down to do whatever you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
And God met me in those couple of months. I just felt like, wow. Probably for the first time, I'm 21 at the time. Mm. And probably for the first time in my life, I felt like, oh, Jesus is here. Mm. He's not a story. He's not an idea. Mm. He's not a character in some cheesy songs we sing.
Yeah.
He's like, there aren't four of us in this house.
Yeah.
There's five. And I don't know how it happened. It was gradual. It was not a Damascus road. I read some line and then I was like, oh, I see him. It wasn't that. It was just gradually over time.
Wow.
I remember being surprised by it because it felt so calm and gentle. I was like, oh, it's sort of undeniable.
Yeah.
Jesus is here and I'm so loved. I am so loved.
Wow.
And I think it was the embodiment of the love of these guys that made it so real, so tangible.
Welcome to the We Are Vineyard podcast, conversations to help us grow with Jesus and each other. This season, we have a number of incredible guests lined up for you, and we're excited to let you know that this season's episodes will also be available as videos. So subscribe on YouTube and never miss an episode. On today's episode, Jay Pathick talks with Jay Kim. Jay Kim is an author and the lead pastor of Westgate, a multi-congregational church in Silicon Valley. Let's listen in.
So here we are in LA.
Yeah.
And you're like a big time famous pastor guy.
No.
I don't know, man. I did a little Googling today.
No.
I did a little Googling today.
No. I have like those weird Christian famous pastor friends.
No, that's not true.
They're my buddies.
All these different websites are like, he's a contributor to this and he's got this cool digital thing.
Contributing is a weird word. You know, what does that
it mean? Is. That's true. But you tricked me anyway, or the internet tricked me.
Okay, the internet tricked you.
Yeah, you're a big time famous guy. So let's start where all good stories start, which is where you were born and where you grew up.
I was born in Incheon, South Korea. Mm-hmm. It was a small city when I was born there, supposedly, in 1979.
Yeah.
I was just there, actually, with my family. First time taking my kids to Korea, to the motherland.
That's
this past
cool.
summer.
That's kind of a big moment.
Oh, so special.
How old are your kids?
They're 10 and 7. Yeah.
Wow, that's a big commitment.
Yeah. But they loved it. They loved it. My 10-year-old, my father passed away. I didn't know my dad. He never lived in the States. Mm. So he's buried out there. And it was really interesting. She's 10 in my mind. She's just my baby.
Yeah.
But we went to the gravesite and my daughter, my 10-year-old, had like a moment. She was very quiet. She was very still. Mm. She was thinking a lot. I asked her afterwards and it was really moving. She was like, yeah, do you think Harabuji is the Korean word for grandfather? Do you think Harabuji would have liked me? You know, those sorts of things. She's like, wondering. Oh, that's really beautiful.
Wow.
So anyways, all that to say, born in Incheon, South Korea. And then my parents, the story I'm told is my parents married out of convenience.
I love
that. Not
love
out of love.
You
know?
Story
I mean,
I'm
I don't
told.
Know.
How would you know?
I was there, but I don't remember. My dad had he wrestled with heavy addiction to several things, substances, gambling. Got unsafe. My mother moved us to the States, to California. Her sister, my aunt, lived in San Jose, California.
So did they follow family that was already moved?
Yeah,
over?
Yeah.
I would
so
assume.
My mom's sister
got it.
Lived in California.
Got
her
it.
Husband, my uncle, served in the U.S. Navy. So
I
he,
see.
I think he expedited the green card thing.
Sure. You could do that then.
Yeah.
Yeah, really?
It's a different world.
Well, yeah. Totally.
It's a
you
different
could do that
world.
Then. It's hard to do now.
Yeah. So, and then I never left. I just grew up in the Bay Area of Northern California, never left. Moved a lot, you know, immigrant family. Mom was working 2-3 jobs at a time, chasing cheap rent. So I moved like 14 times between first grade and senior year of high school.
Wow.
Moved a lot.
Wow.
8 different schools. You know, it was like crazy.
Yeah.
no roots.
But all the same kind of area.
All in the Bay Area. Oh. Yeah. South Bay Area.
Okay.
So, well, and I still live and I'm raising my family there. So,
right now.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just like a, you know, California kid.
I get. And what kind of kid were you? Were you like sport kid? Were you nerdy kid? Were you?
No, I was a lonely kid.
Okay.
You know, I was a lonely kid. No siblings. Oh, okay. Mom wasn't home.
Only child.
Moved all the time.
I'm an only child.
Oh, really? There you go. Yeah. Oh, so you know.
Omega.
You know some of the.
I know I'm the favorite.
Yeah, that's right. There is no doubt I am my mother's favorite.
Exactly.
No competition. It's not close. That's true. That's totally true. Although her grandbabies, my kids, are now her favorite.
Right, right. That's right.
Yeah,
that's true.
You know?
That's true.
So, truly, I was a lonely kid. Mm. I just. Because I moved school so much,
yeah.
And I was naturally quite introverted, pretty shy. Mm. When I got thrust into first grade, I actually didn't speak any English.
Wow.
So, I mean, you can imagine just age six, you can't communicate, super ostracized. But I ended up getting really comfortable just with my own thoughts and imagination. Mm. And so I drew a lot, wrote stories. You know, I was like that kind of kid.
Artsy kid.
A little bit.
That's cool.
Okay. Yeah. So it sounds sad when I say it. I was super lonely. But the reality is like I quite enjoyed just, you know,
totally.
Living in my own head. And that's got positives and negatives. But yeah.
No, and was faith, church, life with God, was that in the
I would assume. Yeah. I mean, so I grew up in the Korean American church because for immigrants and uniquely so for Korean Americans, your Korean American church is not, you know, like in the modern Western mind, it's like, oh, church, that's where I go for 70 minutes on Sunday and then go grocery shopping for the week and then watch football. For immigrants and for Korean Americans especially, churches like you go Wednesday night, you have Friday night youth group, Saturday all day there's activities, there's early morning prayer Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, you're there like morning till evening. Yep. There's a shared meal around a table.
Yep.
And a lot of it is just, you know, everything else about your life, you're the alien. And then you go to church and it's like, oh, my people and the food is the food I eat. We speak the same language, all that stuff. So I grew up at church like all the time.
Like even at the time, you're like, yeah, this is my life. I love this. These are my friends.
Normal.
These are.
It's the only place I felt not alone, honestly, is the church. Hmm. So yeah, just grew up in the church. And then, you know, 90s evangelical youth culture stuff. I was super involved at youth group. Thought I was like a passionate follower of Jesus and then went to college and that whole apparatus of youth group was gone.
Totally.
And my faith was gone with it.
Yeah.
Just went through the whole deconstruction season.
What kind of church did you, where'd you go to school?
Stayed local.
You still could technically go to church.
I could have, but the tricky thing is, you know, I grew up in the kids and then the youth ministry, which was all second generation. We're Korean, but we're like American.
Totally.
Everything's English. There was nothing.
It didn't cross over.
No, it was like we would graduate high school and then it was like, I don't know what to, do you speak Korean? You could just go sit with the adults. And I was like, no. At that point, I was like, I forgot all that. I don't. And this is not, this doesn't feel like I belong here.
Totally.
You know? So, I walked away and deconstructed faith with a group of friends, sadly, who I'd grown up with at church, who just had the same experience. We're like, where do we go?
Yep.
Like, I don't know. I guess we just go do whatever we want to do.
Yeah. And you didn't even like check out big white church around
the corner.
I didn't.
You know, it's so interesting. I didn't even have like, I mean, obviously I knew they existed.
Just no impulse.
There was no impulse to go do that. You know, it felt at that time, I've only served in majority culture churches now as a pastor.
Right.
So it's so strange to think about. But at that time when I was 18, I looked at big white churches and was like, I mean, I can't belong there. You know, I don't even know what this is. You know, I was so unfamiliar.
Well, in your church experience was so tied to a cultural expression.
Yeah.
It's like, that would be like a different thing. I don't
completely
even know
different.
What that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not in a bad way, even just who knows. I don't know.
Yeah. And honestly, because church was the one place where I had friends, what it meant unintentionally was just all of my closest friends were Korean American. Actually, I didn't have hardly any non-Korean American friends who I would have called like close friends.
Fascinating. Not even school. Not even like a...
You know, I never made close friends at school because I went to so many different schools.
You're stuck in this other universe.
Yeah. And I felt satisfied, honestly. Sure. It wasn't like a sad thing. I would just go to school and like, you know, whatever. I was going to class, doing my thing. I was actually quite okay at lunch.
Right.
Alone. I'm like, I mean, I had a few friends here and there, but I was generally like, I'm fine. Like read a book or, you know, whatever. So it just never struck me as a need that I should sort of expand my, you know, boundaries of friendship.
So you go to college. Yeah. You're like, I don't know if I buy any of this. Yeah. I'm just going to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
What did you study?
I was a business management major. The only reason is immigrant degree.
That's one of them. Yeah,
that's right. Like I couldn't be a doctor or a lawyer. I'm not smart enough for that.
So engineer like, for, you know, my dad's Indian. So it's doctor, engineer, lawyer, third. I was going for law.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Which was a bit of a disappointment. Also.
Okay. Okay. The Korean parents love doctor or lawyer.
Right.
For whatever reason.
Yes.
I don't know why.
No, I don't know either.
Yeah. It's like one sibling's a doctor and they do something wrong. They get sued and then the lawyer sibling can come in. I don't know. It's probably a strategic thing. I don't know. But yeah, I did business management, not because I had a desire to, I just didn't know what to do.
Yeah, sure.
And I worked at a bank at the time as a teller. It was my college job, Wells Fargo Bank. And my branch manager, you know, he drove like a Lexus or something. I was like, well.
What's your degree?
Exactly. He was like, well, business management. I was like, great.
Works
I
like, for me.
I'd like to drive a Lexus someday. That's great. I thought I was going to manage a bank. Right. And I majored in that just at a default. Yeah.
So how did faith squeeze its way back into your life?
There was a group of guys, like three guys from that Korean American church. Mm. They were all 4 to 6 years older than me. Mm. When I was in middle school and high school, they were like the cool college guys who were like our small group leaders.
Yep.
And then when I graduated and walked away from my faith and from the church, for whatever reason, these guys never gave up on me. Mm. They never stopped connecting. I mean, they would invite me to continue to shoot hoops with them every Saturday, even though I was no longer going to church. Mm-hmm. Eventually, that turned into on Monday nights, they said, hey, you know, we're getting together at one of these guys' houses, and we just eat pizza, play video games, watch Monday Night Football, hang out. You should come. So I was like, yeah, totally. I mean, they were like good hangs. I like these guys. And they were never pushy on like, they were never like, hey, what's going on with your faith? Like, where's the Jesus? You know, they were just like, how you doing? Yeah. So I liked hanging out with them. Long story short, they tricked me. So, you know, like a month or two into these Monday nights, one night, one of the guys, like 11 p.m., we're playing some video game. And one of the guys says, hey, I started reading this book and it's pretty good. Do you guys want to like read it with me? And at this point, I was so locked in with these guys.
You're like, I guess that's what we're doing.
He's like, yeah, I don't know, whatever. Like, is that what we're going to do when we're here Monday nights? I'll do whatever, you know?
I love this.
So they pull out the book and this is when I knew this was pre-planned. They already had a copy.
They all had one. They're like, here, it's yours. You're like,
yeah, it was like, I thought this was off the cuff. Yeah. You just said it right now. Why do you have four copies of this book? It's kind of weird. Why is my name on the inside cover of this guy? You know, my name wasn't there, but it might as well have been.
What?
Yeah. So they hand me this book and it's The Ragamuffin Gospel by Brennan Manning.
Bro.
And they're upfront about it. They're like, hey man, it's like, this is a Christian book or whatever, but I still think you should read it. Like it's different than what you might expect. So again, I was so in with these guys. It's like, yeah, whatever. I'm down to do whatever you want. Yeah.
Yeah.
And God met me in those couple of months. I just felt like, wow. Probably for the first time, I'm 21 at the time. Mm. And probably for the first time in my life, I felt like, oh, Jesus is here. Mm. He's not a story. He's not an idea. Mm. He's not a character in some cheesy songs we sing.
Yeah.
He's like, there aren't four of us in this house.
Yeah.
There's five. And I don't know how it happened. It was gradual. It was not a Damascus Road. I read some line and then I was like, oh, I see him. It wasn't that. It was just gradually over time.
Wow.
I remember being surprised by it because it felt so calm and gentle. I was like, oh, it's sort of undeniable.
Yeah.
Jesus is here and I'm so loved. I am so loved.
Wow.
And I think it was the embodiment of the love of these guys
that
made it so real, so tangible, you know. And actually, you know, I read The Art of Neighboring many years ago. Mm. And I remember as I was reading it, those guys coming to mind several times.
That's cool.
It was the simplicity and the beauty of it, I think.
Yeah, create connection.
It wasn't big lights and big show.
Right.
It was just a living room and some bad pizza and...
Well, and it sounds like, and I'm sure you've remained connected to at least some of them, not all of them. They definitely had you lined up.
Yeah.
So something about their heart for you, the Lord did something in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I always wonder, like, what is it? How does that happen to people? How do they decide we're taking on this guy?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, but I think the great skill of it was I never felt like, oh, these guys have some weird Christian strategy.
Yeah, you weren't a project.
No. Yeah. It was just like, that's dude, pretty cool. You're a good hang and come over. And
were they still in the original church?
Yeah.
They just went through somehow.
Yeah.
And so they suck you back in.
Well, you know, I think a part of it is they all went away to college.
Okay.
And different universities. And they got really plugged in with like campus ministries.
Right.
So certainly when they came home for the summer, by this time when I'm 21 or so, they're out of college.
Okay.
And I don't know how it was working out. They were still going to that same church, but they were all continuing to volunteer as small group leaders in the high school ministry.
Okay.
And so I think that's what kept them in. I don't recall. I wonder if they had some other, I don't know, at that point, some second generation English speaking Asian American churches had sort of been birthed and planted. So I think they might have been connected to a few of those.
Okay.
But they were still leading small groups, which was like my like sort of gateway drug into ministry.
Yeah.
After this whole ragamuffin gospel.
So they suck you back in.
Well, they didn't even suck me back in. At that point, Jesus had become so compelling. Within the context of these guys, I still wasn't going to church. But by the time we got through the book and we're like on to another book and, you know, I was like, man, I'm finding so much life here. I don't know what the blueprint is, but I trust these guys. I guess I just am going to, I want to do what they do.
Yeah.
So I'm still going to, at that point, I'm going to San Jose State University. I'm working at a bank and they were leading small groups. So I was like, can I do that? So I did, and I led this seventh grade boys small group. And like seventh graders are like barely human beings, you know,
rough.
And they smell weird all the time.
Well, and they're not quite old enough to have agency.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. They still are dependent on everybody else to do everything.
Yes,
but they kind of want agency.
Yeah,
so they can have adult conversations in spurts.
Totally.
But then they can't even get to where the meeting is.
Totally.
And then they're still acting like they're four in other moments. Yeah. Yeah.
You know what's weird though, Jay, is like that, you know, that liminality of middle school. I think it was like divine providence that they planted me with those boys. Because I felt like I was in a liminal space.
Right. I'm like you.
So oddly enough, I was like, oh. I feel the way you feel. Like you don't know how to be in your own body.
Yeah, that's good.
And I kind of don't know either in a different way.
Totally.
You know? Yeah. And eventually I started waking up every day thinking less and less about my papers and my job at the bank and whatever else I was doing. And I was just thinking about these questions these boys were asking me about God and faith and the Bible and, and eventually it got to the point where I was like, oh, maybe I should do this all the time.
I should learn more about how to do this.
Yeah. Change my life.
Wow. Okay. So you lead that, still working at the bank.
Yep.
Hoping someday to drive a Lexus. What made it to where you're like, I think ministry could be a thing.
It was that small group.
But then what's the next step?
Yeah, the next step is the guy who's the youth pastor at the time.
He's like, you're doing a good job.
Yeah. He just started very, again, gently, quietly, but clearly affirming some things. Like, hey, man, I see these boys like really leaning into you. Hey, like the questions you're asking them.
Yeah.
Those are like really great questions, like opening something up in them. So I didn't, you know, you don't. Especially like when you're serving in youth ministry, like you, it's hard to know if am I doing a good job. I mean, like these kids aren't. I have no idea. I can't read them. You know, I don't know. So to hear that from an outside trusted voice was so helpful. And then eventually, we would do these like once a month Friday night sort of rally events. They would invite several other youth groups. There'd be like a couple hundred kids.
All really, Korean still.
All Korean American, churches. And it was really cool, really fun, big, loud. And I remember distinctly one day, James, the youth pastor, he says to me, he's like, hey man, at the next one, do you want to give the message? It was so weird because I'd never preached a sermon before.
How would I do that?
But something in me, and I knew I had no idea how to do it and I'd be a nervous wreck, but something in me immediately was like, yeah, that'd be really fun. I think I'd try. I'd like to try to do it. So I did. And I remember I wrote and then delivered a sermon on Peter walking on water. And I'm pretty sure it was like 70% heresy. I actually think a couple friends told me afterwards in love, like, they were like, hey man, I don't think that's like what Christians have believed about that story for two millennia, but you already said it. Yeah, the kids are gone. Late. I don't know what to do. I was like, oh my gosh.
We can't get them back. Yeah.
It's like, no.
Let's just hope it doesn't stick.
Yeah. But man, I loved it.
Wow.
I loved the process of it. So that, you know, and I received so much affirmation. I mean, the sermon was bad, objectively bad, but I received so much affirmation from a few people who were like, that was a bad sermon, but, you know, like maybe there's something there.
These threshold moments are so important.
Yeah.
Like, can someone tell you the truth and still affirm you? That's really, that's a really hard skill to develop. Yeah. My first time teaching, the pastor came. We're in this big young adult thing that's growing. He comes. It wasn't the main deal, but it was a thing.
Yeah.
And it was a disaster. Like, I knew it was a disaster while
Did you know while it was happening?
While it was happening, I was like, this isn't working. I couldn't tell why. You know, I didn't have enough skill. Anyway, we get done, go into a ministry thing. And he leaves me a note. I still have the note to this day.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I'm a kind of sports guy, an NBA guy. He knew that. His note said, watching you tonight was like watching Shaq in the seventh grade.
Whoa.
You have more potential than you know, and there's a lot to learn.
Yeah.
I'm cheering you on.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling all the emotions at the same time.
Yeah.
Seventh grade, I mean... You know, so I heard the challenge up, but then also, he thinks that maybe I could do this.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Right. You know, and it started a journey, but that's a really tough thing to navigate.
It's really hard.
People you're training. Like, that wasn't great. And there's something here. I believe in you.
Yeah.
That's a good. So you catch the bug. Do you go do, I mean, I don't know enough of your church tradition.
You have
to go do the Bible school
thing. So shortly after that, I'm in my last year of college.
Business management or whatever,
San Jose State. And this thing, this desire, you know, this longings, like holy longing, you know, has just taken such a hold of me that every day going to school and studying whatever I was studying, I have zero motivation. How am I going to write this paper? How am I going to? So I have some conversations with my mom and with this group of guys. Here's what I'm thinking about. What do you think? Would you pray with me? Long story short, the school's no longer there. They moved to the Sacramento area. But at the time in San Jose, where I lived, there was a Bible college, a small Bible college, San Jose Christian College.
Okay.
And I talked to the youth pastor as well. And he said, I just asked him, I was like, man, do you think you're so encouraging to me, but be honest, like do you
yeah, think I'm about to change my life here. Yeah, yeah, right.
Do you think I could like do what you do? And similar, I still have the note. He opens his Bible and he has a little note written in the Bible with a date. And it was like the week after I preached that sermon, terrible sermon.
Right.
And he has written in there a prayer for me. He's written it down in the hopes that someday he might show it to me. And the prayer is essentially, it's long, so but essentially the prayer whittles down to, Lord, I think you have a specific plan for Jay. And I hope and pray by your spirit that you'd open him up to that plan.
Wow.
And he hands it to me. It's like, man, I think that's God doing that.
Yeah, you think? Yeah.
So I dropped out of San Jose State and I enrolled at San Jose Christian College and I started interning at that youth group and 20 hours a week. And it was so fun and like, it was so beautiful. And it did not prepare me for how hard ministry would be because I was insulated by the youth pastor truly 98% of what I got to do was just so fun.
Wow.
But in those early days, that was really important to me.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah,
it was affirming like, oh man, there's so much life here.
Yeah, there's momentum.
It's so meaningful, you know? Yeah. So that's how it started.
Okay, and, so now you're youth and now you're, as we described, a big time famous guy on the internet.
What if the communities you're building could only be as healthy as you are? Better Together is back, and this year we're going deeper. Join Vineyard USA Associations July 21st through 23rd at North Jersey Vineyard for a transformational gathering where beloved community meets emotionally healthy leadership. Featuring Drew Hyun from Emotionally Healthy Discipleship, you'll discover how to lead from wholeness instead of woundedness and build communities where people don't just attend, they truly belong. This isn't just another conference. It's a reset for your soul and a vision for the community God's called you to lead. Early bird pricing is available through May 4th. So don't wait. Learn more and register today at bettertogether.vineyardusa.org. We'll see you there.